Hello, everybody on the Suffolk Cram.
Scazzes.
Welcome to episode 232. You'll notice we have a interloper in our midst. Zaber has the dreaded, as the Americans say, he's got the Rona.
You think he's got the Rona. That's why I'm back. Just kind of, you know, did him a bit.
Yeah, so I've had to get the intern back in. That's the sore thing. I've had to hastily edit the graphics.
I like that. I really like that. I was going to say to you, why don't you get like a plaster? Just like gaff it over the top. That's great. Hang on, 1 second.
That's quite good. We have an injured Scaz back with us.
Wounded.
Yes. Joining us now, we're hoping that the podcast in 2 weeks' time, Zabel will be better and that Scaz won't have to join us for that one again. But you never know. He might still be ill in the 1 in 2 weeks.
If he isn't back in 2 weeks, just wait longer.
Yeah. Just wait. I think he'll be back in January in that situation. I'm sure he will.
Yeah.
So, Scaz, long time no see. How you been?
I'm alive, man. I'm doing great.
Yeah.
I'm wounded.
What did you do to yourself? Is it something you can talk about on podcast? Is it clean enough to talk about on podcast?
No, I can't. I'm a citizen of the internet, and I'm a guy, and it's a good thing I'm used to doing things one-handed, but I think I might have gone a little too far.
Yeah.
So.
Happens, mate, happens.
I mean, I'll take your word for it, Ram. I mean, we can't all be, you know, with the ladies like you.
The ladies? What ladies?
Also, you got like what the clouds? Well, the men,
the sheep, the pigs, the cattle.
That's not a very nice way to speak to the fucking women. The cows.
Yeah.
The cows. Of,
yeah. Well, I hereby classify you as cattle.
Then some good breeding hips.
Yeah. Funny you say that. Apparently, I've been told this story. When my friend of mine, his now wife, they don't happen to go together very long. And one day she walked past him and he goes, "Oh, you've got the hips of a dairy cow."
What a compliment. Add that to the list, guys. I mean, he's been married and had children since, right?
He's had three children since. But see, what he meant is she had good hips for breeding, is what he basically meant. But yeah, his compliment was, you've got the hips of a dairy cow.
Women these days won't get that.
Yeah.
So he's got a good one.
Fortunately, she's right, didn't take offence. So it's nice than what he said to me once, so... There's improvement there in that regards.
Well, you've got the hips of a dairy cow.
No, we were discussing our various weights, and I said to him, I weighed about 120 kilos. He goes, "Oh, you're a fat pig there, pagan weight."
Bacon you're about weight, ready for the slaughter, Ram.
Yeah, you're ready to go. It's like, cheers, thanks.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks, mate. But his pork does taste good, and that's the secret sauce, you see.
Just chucking people at work into the farm into the grinder. That food is really good. Those hampers are fantastic, by the way.
Yeah. Your hamper's on order.
Can't wait.
I need to speak to you about that after the podcast anyway. We'll discuss that. But anyway, thank you, everybody, for joining us this episode 232. It's been great to have us back. It's great to have Scaz back.
Hang on. Oh, mate, 232?
That's going to really throw you because you've missed several. You've completely lost track now of what a podcast is. I could tell you podcast 500 and you'll be completely lost.
See, you've completely screwed with me because you said you changed the podcast days. You changed the days, Ram.
Yes.
You're doing different things, Ram. And I'm like, my week has always been planned. Wednesdays and Saturdays is when stuff happens, right? I actually genuinely started freaking out when I kind of stopped doing them. All that time ago, I started freaking out. Like I was having like withdrawal. I didn't know what to do.
Ryan has never been compared to crack cocaine before, but there we go.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's damn true. And then he fucking changes everything. Watch your language, Ram, please.
I know, I quite enjoy the half six podcast. It's quite nice. You get done, it gets about half six. Oh, I'm done now. I can go watch some TV.
Yeah, but see, here's the trick, though. I'm here now, which means that even though you've started at 6:30, was probably still not actually going to get anywhere until 10, 11.
We'll see. We'll see. Of course, we've got another one to record. We ain't got another one to record, obviously, after this at all. But we have, you know.
No.
No, it's not doubling up at all.
Never done that before.
Well, as the guest is back, and he's a guest now, we'll have to ask what Skaz has been up to, apart from doing things to his fingers and unmentionable things to his fingers.
Yeah. Well,
what have you done to your finger, if you don't mind me asking? What actually have you done?
Oh, do you remember all them years ago I was doing things I shouldn't be doing to drains? Very sexy drain pipes. I was laying some pipe, right, mate? Oh, yeah. Do you remember when I almost lost my leg a few years ago? I'd spent a couple of weeks in hospital.
Yes.
All right. Well, apparently this could be tied into that.
What? It's all like move from your leg to your finger.
Well, no, it's because for the last like 3 or so years, I've been wearing gloves on the regular. And my immune system has been through the floor. And it turns out that I've had a few lingering problems that we couldn't figure out why I wasn't getting better. And don't worry about it. You know, your body will fight that. I'll be gone within a couple of years. It's like, oh yeah, well I've had them for like, you know, I've had it for like 4 to 8 years now. And they're like, oh, well, you know, don't worry. It's not that big of a deal unless you're dealing with them.
Do the eyes go wide and go, oh?
I've been trying to get this sorted for a few years since like before COVID, and I started getting palmed off by the NHS, you know, kind of given the old it's not that big of a deal thing. They said, well, it's not that big of a deal unless, and they start listing out these specific things.
Gamer, bike rider, has kids,
chronic wanker, wife,
yeah.
And
lives in a terrace house, owns a spaniel.
And I was like, all of the above, mate. And they were like, oh. And the trouble is my son started getting sick. My wife has an immune condition as well. And I'm supposed to be their carer, right? But it got to the point where everything kind of went the wrong way, and I became like kryptonite to them. If like they were like Superman, I was kryptonite, and so I couldn't help them. So I had to keep kind of like sterilizing things. I had to wear gloves to do everything. You know, my skin started to get kind of weak. It was really not particularly pleasant, and trying to get the doctors to do anything, it just weren't a thing. My son goes in, they check him, and they say, all right, we'll sort out a referral. Like, he doesn't need to be sorted. There's other stuff for him. He'll be fine. Months later, turns out he was fine. They look at me, holy Christ, this isn't particularly great. We'll see if we can get you a referral to the hospital. The hospital says no. We can try and get you a grant. The hospital says no. Because I could have got a grant to go private. Hospital says no. I go in a little bit later after a balked blood test that the doctors asked for, and it caused my arm to swell up. Like, it looked like I'd broken my arm. Like my entire arm kind of went purple. And it was from that point, I go to see my doctor again, and he's like, oh, Christ, hang on. That all the stuff you've got on your arm could act like a tourniquet. That's a problem. And then he takes a look at my hands, and he's like, how long has this been a thing? Because your hands are swelling up too. And I was like, oh yeah, ages. He goes, your wedding ring, that's going to have to come off, because your hand is, and as he starts to try and pull off the wedding ring, he's like cleaving chunks of skin off my hand.
Oh, fucking hell.
Yeah, and so from
I always told you getting married is bad for you.
Well, it's mainly affected my ring finger. So you know it's not been great. So I had to take the wedding ring off, and then after that, it was like, look, I'm gonna have to get you in to see someone because this just ain't right. Your body should be doing something with this. It's not right. And so I had to go in, and they're just trying to like, well, from where my hand has all started to swell up, they're trying to make that not a thing. And yeah, it's not great. So from now until January, I'll be going in for regular appointments at the doctors to have them, the doctors and the hospital, to try and get them to fix my hands up.
Oh, okay. Well, at least you're on the mend.
Long story, but
you're on the mend. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, mate, and I found out today from the doctor, they're not getting paid. It's not covered.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the NHS won't, they still won't cover it, even though it's being treated, and I've had four medical professionals now tell me this is the like a pretty not great situation I've got myself into. Speaking to the doctor today, he said, look, I'll do it anyway. He said, it's not covered, but we'll do it anyway. So,
oh, well, that's good on them.
Yeah, really pleased. Really, yeah. Really pleased, because it could have turned out to be quite expensive.
Yeah, it could be, yeah. We've had a comment. Nice to see you back.
Thanks.
Thank you very much for saying that. I really appreciate it.
We're back. But yeah, it's been all great, but I haven't been able to really play any games. Because my hands are gammy. but I have been messing around with some tech.
Go for it. Yeah, talk about it.
So, where I've been trying to take a bit of a break, I've been kind of craving my old setups. Like, so I miss gaming. I miss the old stuff. If you remember, I used to have a games room with all my equipment set up.
Yes, you
did,
yeah.
With all my old consoles, and I had video scalers and audio mixers and all that
kind
of stuff.
It was a cool room.
And all of that got pulled apart. It's really sad. Really sad. All this equipment, all these scalers, all this cool stuff, couldn't use it. And just before I left the podcast, I managed to put in an order for, or it was around the time I left the podcast, I managed to put in an order for an Analog Pocket, which is an FPGA like retro console. You know what an FPGA is? I'd hope so.
Yeah, oh god! Programmable
field programmable gate array.
That's it. I was struggling with the F part because what was the field? I was trying the F part. Yeah,
yeah. Everyone says that's something different, but from what I remember, it's field programmable gate array.
That sounds right to memory.
I don't remember what the other variant is that people say, but I from what I remember, that's what it is. Anyways, what that is, normally you have software emulation. And hardware emulation. FPGA is hardware emulation. Software emulation is you run an environment on your computer, a program on your computer, and that will simulate an environment to run another piece of software. Right? The trouble with software emulation, generally, is that it is sequential. So, you know, it's got a list of code, a list of instructions, and it runs down that list as is. An FPGA will have the same list, but because it's operating like real hardware, assuming that...
Yeah, because that's an integrated circuit.
Yeah, it can do things in parallel.
Yeah.
So in theory, or more, it can do things more, sarcastic quotes, more accurately, and there'll be reduced latency because of the fact that it can do things like parallel. You know, it can run instructions in parallel and stuff like that.
Makes sense.
Just quickly to dispel, FPGA doesn't always mean it's more accurate than an emulator. Okay?
It depends entirely on who programmed it.
Exactly. It depends on the quality of the FPGA. So if the FPGA actually has the space on it to run the instructions, imagine an FPGA as like your inventory in Resident Evil, like where you've got a box or a grid. You have to organize everything in the grid to make it fit.
Yeah,
and different instructions will take up a different number of kind of boxes or things, or different number of spaces in your grid. And as long as you can fit them all in, then you've got a pretty accurate FPGA. It's all down to how many instructions the thing can take and the skills, really, of the person coding the core, the FPGA.
yeah,
the code that's running on it.
And that sort of thing, and programming hardware, like at a hardware level, is when we get like that, is a lot more complicated than software level. Sure. You're dealing with having to work out like latency and components and stuff. It's a lot trickier.
It's magical stuff. It's really magical stuff.
People who are good at it are like wizards, basically.
When it works, it's absolutely fantastic. But you have to remember, it's all down to the FPGA itself, the capabilities of the FPGA, and the person coding it. It doesn't always mean that it's going to be more accurate than a software emulator, but the potential is there. So I get this little FPGA handheld console. And it's okay. Look, I'm expecting the world from this thing, right? But the cores on it weren't fantastic. There were some things on it that just didn't function as I'd like them to. So as an example, the Analog Pocket allows you to plug in cartridges, run actual cartridges, and it also allows you to dock the Game Boy Advance, Game Boy like shaped console, handheld, into a dock, and then it'll come out on the TV. A few things that I need when I play emulation. If I'm playing Game Boy Advance, I need to have a muted color palette, and I need to have frame blending or LCD dithering turned on, or something to that effect, like a ghosting. Okay, just in case anyone's curious what that is. So the Game Boy Advance had a very oversaturated color palette because the Game Boy Advance didn't have a backlight on its display. Back or it wasn't back, side lit, whatever lit. It wasn't lit at all. It was just a bare ass LCD.
Yeah.
No lighting on it. No, that was the original Game Boy. Game Boy Advance color.
Oh, okay.
But it because it didn't have a backlight. Well, no, I don't think any of the Game Boys really had backlights properly until Game Boy Pocket Light.
They were front lit, weren't they, mostly when they did add lighting. They front lit it, didn't they?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that was the Game Boy Advance SP.
Yeah,
the clamshell thing. You know, neat systems, but they because it wasn't lit originally. To compensate for this, they oversaturated everything on the color palette. So, like, if all you needed was a little bit of light and things looked right,
yeah?
If you were to then use a Game Boy Advance player or to emulate things, stuff would look really oversaturated because, well, obviously it's been perfectly lit.
Yeah.
And so it would kind of look weird. I like to have a muted color palette to have it display almost as it would.
Yeah.
So that it doesn't look like all the colors are really popping and, like, it looks terrible if you play Game Boy Advance games on an emulator and you don't mute the colors. It just looks too bright and not right. You know, your character goes from being a blonde kid to having this electric yellow hair kind of thing or something like that. It's just not, it doesn't look right to me. The other thing is like dithering, frame blending. And the reason for that is because of the types of display that Nintendo used to put in their handhelds, they would almost simulate a transparency effect by kind of utilizing screen ghosting, like delay between frames. So you'd go on, off, on, off. And because of the delay between on and off, there'd still be like a ghosted image of the thing on the off frame.
A bit like pulse width modulation in like, when they used how like dimmable LEDs work. They don't dim; they just basically go on off.
Yeah, they flicker, so you end up because that's why a lot of people can't use like OLED screens and they get headaches and stuff. It's usually because of PWM. The faster the flicker, we don't see it, but we can still kind of perceive it.
Yeah.
Well, that's the kind of thing that they do on the Game Boys and the Game Boy Advances, and so it would kind of give you a kind of effect of transparency. If you don't have those options for Game Boy Advance, I can't play them because some of the games that I play use those features.
Yeah.
They use that, like, the blending.
They've been designed around it. They've been designed around it, haven't they?
Yeah. So when you play in an emulator, like, for example, a clear example, and the one that I test all this stuff on is F-Zero Maximum Velocity. It's one of my favorite games on the Game Boy Advance. It's a little racing game. Mm. You ever played any of the games in the F-Zero franchise, right?
No. I know of them, but I've never played any of them.
Sure. Well, I use this game to test specifically because, one, I like the muted color palette on it. The colors just look right. Purple looks purple instead of, like, right in your face. You know, all the colors look as they should. And the map, there's a map, like a track map, in the bottom left-hand corner. If you play it on emulators or FPGAs and that without frame blending or dithering, it just flashes in the bottom corner and it's really, really, really annoying. Turn on frame blending and it looks right, just like it did on the Game Boy Advance.
Yeah.
The Analog Pocket allows you to play games on cartridges, and since they unlocked there's two FPGA cores on it. One of them is for the cartridge slot, and one of them allows you to run games off of the memory card slot. And as of now, I don't know if they've updated it or if they're probably going to update it in the future because they've got two firmware releases coming out soon. As of right now, the only way to use the muted color palettes and use frame blending is by putting in an actual cartridge, and that is a ball ache. Mm. So you don't do it. And then it looks terrible. The Analog Pocket is absolutely beautiful. For a piece of hardware, it is beautiful. But having to carry around those cartridges to be able to use those effects, it's not a thing for me. It's not a thing for me because I've been spoilt by portable emulation devices, software emulation devices, and those give me the ability to mute the color palette and turn on frame blending. So at that point, whilst the FPGA is supposed to be, sarcastic air quotes, more accurate, the software emulator is better. I've been asked, actually, in a lot of cases, which do I feel is better, FPGA or software? And I say it really depends on what you want. If you get a more powerful FPGA system like the Mr. FPGA or the Mars FPGA that isn't out yet. The Mars isn't, the Mr. is. The Mr. cores have all of the frame blending and palette options, and you just run ROMs off of it.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal. FPGA on that, phenomenal. The Analog, not so much. Here's the trick though. So I've gone on a bit of a tangent. If you want a portable emulation device and you're not particularly bothered by latency, controller latency, input latency, handheld emulation device. Pretty much anyone on the market right now from 50 quid up to about 150 quid will be absolutely phenomenal for most people's needs. Just buy the one that has any extra specific features you might like. Analog sticks, TV out, that kind of thing. Is it Android-based, Linux-based, whatever. I've been on a hunt to find, like, my ultimate retro handheld. Is it an FPGA? Is it a software emulator? Depends on the stuff. Or if you do want to play your cartridges, or you don't mind, not having access to that kind of stuff, like the palettes and all that, go FPGA. But FPGA is going to cost you about... My Analog Pocket, the dock and the case and a screen protector came in after shipping and import fees, nearly £500.
Ooh.
There's a huge difference. Ooh. And that, for the sake of sarcastic air quotes, accuracy, unless you are sensitive to latency, to input specifically, just go with a software emulator.
You're going to get majority of the features. Anymore.
You know, with the extra like 400 notes in your back pocket, there's so much stuff you could be doing. I will say though, Mr. FPGA, that has direct interface for regular controllers, a serial interface for plugging in actual control pads from like Saturn and Super Nintendo and NES and all that. So you don't have to worry about latency there, right? But note that some of the latency you're feeling is probably actually coming from your television set.
Yeah.
Probably more so than the controller input.
Mm.
And if you can really hardcore feel the controller input, sometimes I'm quite skeptical about that when people say they can really feel controller lag. Something that I think most people could adapt to, but unless you're going to be playing like shmups and stuff, I don't really think it matters. But you have to figure out, is it worth 350 quid to 500 quid to go FPGA of a software?
Yeah.
Now, I own an Analog Pocket. I own a Mr. FPGA. I actually bought the Mr. FPGA after I got the Analog Pocket because I wasn't happy with the way that the Analog Pocket wouldn't give me access to all those extra features I wanted out of the box. Mr. is phenomenal if you want a home console. Absolutely phenomenal if you want a home console. And it's great if you want to play Saturn and N64, which isn't emulated very well. And it's great if you want to play light gun games because you can hook it straight up to a TV and use one of the adapters, the serial adapters, to plug in a light gun and play with the actual hardware. That's fucking
How does light guns work? Because I thought that wasn't possible anymore with
in the case of the Mr. and that, I went for the analog option. So Mr. has analog and digital. It's based on the DE10 Nano FPGA development board.
Yeah.
And it's got HDMI out on it by default, but you can buy an expansion board to go on top that has what looks like a VGA connector.
Right.
And you can connect that up to VGA, RGB SCART. I think there's an adapter for composite video in there. And then you plug it into a CRT TV. And then that way you can actual light guns on the actual games. Because obviously it's an FPGA, so it's going to be functioning, if coded correctly, like an actual console.
Yeah, no, because I always thought that what stopped light guns was the TV. So I thought using like non-analog TVs.
There are modern light guns that apparently do function on modern TVs, but I think that's more, you get like a little pointer cursor, like a red dot.
Yeah,
kind of like using the Wii remote or whatever.
Yeah, I thought you'd only use like a little base station that basically triangulates the position of the gun and works out the angle it's pointing, works out where it's on the screen or something.
I think that's what they've got going in some cases. But for me, I wanted to play like Time Crisis and Point Blank and Virtual Cop. We still have a CRT at my parents' house. And the Mr. is small enough to whap in a bag and go. You know, so sometimes you just kind of like take it to my parents' house, bust out the light guns, and we play some like, you know, Virtual Cop or Time Crisis or whatever. Should know actually as well, these things aren't very powerful. Like, don't expect to play like... in the case of the Mr. is more powerful than the Analog Pocket. The Mr. will play things up to Saturn, PlayStation, N64. N64 is a push. The Analog, expect like Super Nintendo, Game Boy, Game Boy Advance, Mega Drive, that kind of stuff. Don't expect anything 3D like PlayStation or whatever, significantly less powerful than the Mr. The reason I went for the Analog as well, actually, just as a note, is because my hands are stuffed. And the Mr. is an open source project, and you have to actually put the pieces together. It's just like Lego, really. You just go, here's the RAM, you know, the RAM stick, stick it in the board. Here's your other board, push it into the GPIO pins and stuff. Like, it's just like a sandwich, just push fit it together. But because I can't feel my hands very well, that can be kind of risky. You know, even using a screwdriver for me these days is pretty brutal. I've murdered many a laptop in recent history through that kind of stuff. But the playing around with Mr. and all that, depending on what you want to do, it is really what you want to do, right? If you aren't sensitive to input lag, don't worry about FPGAs. Don't drink the Kool-Aid that the retro community is kind of peddling to you. Don't go, oh, mate, but it's super accurate. Depends on the FPGA and depends on the coder. Oh, mate, it's got all these features and this and that and whatever. But you can get most of those features on an actual emulator.
There comes a point where software emulation is basically a brute force approach.
Yeah.
And if you have a power, if the processing is powerful enough, mm-hmm. you at that point it doesn't matter because it's powerful enough. The noticeability goes down.
Sure. And there are magical algorithmic tricks that people are doing to reduce input and output lag. Yeah. So if you are one of those people who are sensitive to that kind of stuff, you don't have to worry about it. But yeah, what I'm trying to get at is that I own those things. I own those big boy devices. I own the original hardware. I own video scalers. And then I went and spent like another couple hundred quid after that buying different retro handhelds.
Yeah.
Like just little emulators, like a Linux one. I've got a couple of Android ones, and they're phenomenal. Like, frankly, if all you want to do is just dip your toes in and play some games when you're on the toilet, go for it. But, like, just pick one. Pick your poison. Do you want the bespoke FPGA system, or do you want, like, a cheapy little handheld you can just chuck in your bag and do whatever?
Yeah.
The games are going to play largely the same.
Yeah, of course they will.
So, you know, and emulation has just gone so, so good.
Yeah.
In recent history. I've just been playing with those things. I haven't been able to really play games, but it's just been nice to just kind of sit there and go, you can listen to the music on them. I wanted to do some coding on the analog.
Yeah.
Because they've got like Game Boy Studio included on it, which is a program that you can make Game Boy games with it.
Oh,
like
cool.
Like a WYSIWYG thing. You can download the software on your computer and then you load the games onto the analog pocket.
Oh, neat.
They also include a license to Nanoloop, which is a MIDI program. Analog also sells cables, so you can plug the Analog Pocket into like a MIDI keyboard or whatever, so you can actually play the output sounds from the Analog Pocket or the Game Boy, the Game Boy Advance or whatever from the keyboard. It's really cool. People have been doing that with modified original Game Boys over the years. Really, really fantastic stuff for nearly 500 quid.
Yeah.
Really just depends. It depends what you want to do. It's just been nice to just, I can sit there, I can listen to some music, I can look at this gorgeous screen, I can maybe daydream one day I'll be one of those wizards that can program an FPGA. I can play some Saturn games on a CRT, or I can go, I don't want to put my 500-pound handheld console into a skanking backpack or in my pocket and walk into town with it. I'll just buy a 50 quid emulation device.
Yeah.
And the saves will work between because they're just SRAM dumps. And
yeah, you
know, it's been really cool to play with that kind of stuff. Have you ever thought of doing any of that?
I've thought of dabbling with it because I came to sort of gaming quite late in many ways, so I sort of missed. I know I had a Game Boy. I had a Sega Mega Drive. Had none of the Nintendo. It was a nice system. And I've emulated Sega Mega Drive games before. We had a, what was it called? Doesn't exist anymore. It was a brand that sort of like tried it, and they didn't. Oh, what was it called?
The CDI.
No, it was a handheld. It was like a screen in the middle, controls on either side.
Clicky stick?
Man, clicky stick. What was it called? It was early 2000s we had that.
Neo Geo Pocket Color?
Neo Geo, yes. I think it was a Neo Geo we had.
The Pocket? Yeah, that had been the Neo Geo Pocket. I had one of those. I loved that.
Yeah. Yeah, we had one of those.
Mate, that was a. I don't know what you thought about. I thought that was a phenomenal console.
Yeah, I played some random game on it where you were like a robot. It's a robot and you were like battling other people and stuff. I remember playing on it. Got into it quite a lot.
Biomotor Unitron.
Probably, yeah. Probably. Was one of your characters like a lizardy thing? I vaguely remember.
You could be a lizard man. Like, and the idea was that you would go to one of these four dungeons around the town.
That sounds right, yeah.
And you could go to like the pub and talk to like a fortune teller. You could go to the battle arena, or you could go to the workshop.
That sounds right. Yeah,
have your teammate kind of build, because you had a teammate who was an engineer, and he or she would build your robot.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yes, but mate, you actually you had a copy of Biomotor Unitron, you lucky bastard.
Yeah, I think it's in a box somewhere. To be honest.
Oh my God, Ram.
Turns out I was hip and didn't know it.
I've only ever played it through ROM. That was one that Bard absolutely gushed over back in the day.
Yeah.
He loved that game. He would always tell people, yeah, mate, you've got to play Biomutant Unitron on the Neo Geo Pocket. But no one bought a Neo Geo Pocket.
We did.
And but you did. And when I got something, when I first saw it, I was like, nah, Neo Geo Pocket, nah, I ain't going to get one of them. And then when I got one, I was like, oh, crap, I want to play these games. And then nowhere was selling the games anymore.
Yeah.
You'd see a couple of them, because it didn't last long in the UK, did it?
No, it disappeared very quickly. It disappeared. I think it wasn't long after we got it, basically disappeared. So it's like, oh, well, there's nothing we purchased that was a bit of a failure.
Oh, mate, but that was such a good handheld.
It was so good. I enjoyed it.
I mean, it had some phenomenal fighting games on it, Biomutant Unitron on it. I mean, the user interface in Biomutant Unitron's a bit, but the music on it's good and the sprites are beautiful.
Yeah, no, it's a fun little game. I played that quite a lot because it was my sister who originally got it, but she didn't really play it very much, and I ended up playing this Biomutant Unitron and getting quite into it.
gonna have to send you an image of the cartridge, man. So good.
Yeah,
so good.
No, and so yeah, I never really got into like the pocket stuff. I was always very early on gravitated towards PC gaming, computer gaming quite early on, and sort of stuck with it since.
Sure.
We had an Amiga. So is that PC or was that more? I mean, in my head, I see it more like a console, could plugged into your telly, but it wasn't.
Yeah, people just bought
it,
that to play games, dude.
Yeah, but it's, you know,
I got told there were Amiga monitors, like there were monitors for Amigas. I was like, I've never seen one, but like everyone I knew just used to plug like their Commodore 64 or their Amiga and that into the telly.
Yeah, that's what we did. Yeah, and that had that awful the awful mouse, which was square and two big square buttons on it.
Yeah.
I think ours was like a really awful shade of green, but like a really sort of like minty green, but quite light coloured.
You sure you weren't smoking around at REM?
No, I don't do that. No, I didn't do that at the time.
I was going to say, because those things did change colour pretty quickly, and they weren't really, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, they weren't supposed to, but they did.
My sister, IFOX Decipher, she once made it was like a paint program on it, and she once drew, using just the mouse, this wonderful like landscape picture stuff. It was absolutely wonderful. But something that she now has learned, that is, just save regularly.
Oh, mate, no.
She didn't save at all, and then the Amiga crashed.
Brutal.
Yeah, because it crashed with the screen, it froze on screen, and we could see it, and you couldn't save it. And the only option was to
get a camera. You got a pocket camera, and then the flash just reflected off the TV.
Yeah, like, there was nothing we could do because there's no way we could. We were hoping that it might sort of wake up and like sort of come back, and of course it didn't.
You left it sitting there for days just to see if it had
not quite that long, but it was the only TV in the house, and I wanted to watch television. It felt like in some ways this kind of life support of sort of a loved one, really, when you had to switch it off and lose this lovely image.
Oh, mate, no.
It was horrible. I was like, oh. And it's like, you should have saved more often.
It's like, I didn't know I had to.
Well, now you've learned.
Computers don't go wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, mate.
Talking of saving, that actually sort of slightly segues into what I'm going to be talking about.
Oh, I?
Yeah. So, is there anything else you want to add on to emulation and stuff before we move on?
Just get what fits your budget. All of these emulation systems are largely the same. FPGAs are cool.
Yeah.
They're expensive. They are really expensive. Just enjoy games.
Yeah. It's something I would almost say for the actual enthusiast to want, you know, really into your emulation stuff. If you're just someone who wants to sort of dabble in emulation. Yeah.
You know, and you really want it, go for it. If you're on the fence about it, if you're thinking about it, don't. If you have to go, do I really want it? Don't.
If you're also a person who wants to play the old sort of emulated game every now and again, probably not worth it. But if you're really into emulation and stuff and you're really keen on classic retro gaming, then it's probably worth doing.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Cool. Well, the same brings me on to, because what I've been playing, and I have been playing a game which I've not discussed as a playing a game on podcast, but anyone who's listened to the podcast for a long time will know about it, because it's one of my favouritest games of all time. I've been playing Thief Deadly Shadows.
Oh, Thief 3?
Thief 3, yes. Thief 3, the third Thief game in the trilogy.
With the water arrows.
All thieves have water arrows, but yes, it has water arrows as well.
I don't remember them in the other ones, but...
It was in the other ones. So the difference between Thief 3 to the other ones is it got rid of the rope arrows.
Oh, that might have been it.
Yeah, rope arrows are ones that you could basically shoot into anything that was wood and then drop a rope down. So they got rid of those, but they placed them with climbing gloves, which you could climb on anything that was stone. But that was a sort of bit. But it had, other than that, it had all the same arrows. You had water arrows, gas arrows, fire arrows, and so forth.
Deadly Shadows, wasn't that the first one consolized?
Yes, it was.
Because it was an Xbox. Because I played it on Xbox.
Yeah, it was a. There was a. Yeah, it was the first console Thief game. The others, I don't think ever made. Yeah, very, very good game. It was a game I remember buying. It came out in 2004, if memory serves me right.
Was it that late?
Yeah, it was early. It might have been 2003, but it's 2000. I was. The only reason I know say that is I was at college at the time doing my IT, so I know roughly when it was. But I'm sure it was 2004. It was definitely because it was an Unreal 2 engine game as well, and it was around the same time. Yeah, it was also around the same time that because also it came out after Deus Ex Invisible War as well. So, because they're basically made by very similar, I think there's a lot of crossover in the teams.
Invisible War was the consoled.
Very consoleized Deus Ex console, game.
Yeah, because they tried to make it fit onto an Xbox, didn't they, or something to that effect. And then when it came to PC, people were like, ooh, what's going on?
Luckily, those were back in the days where you could mod it also very easily by just changing it through INI files to fix all that stuff. So, yeah, because people complained about, like, the HUD was, like, too sort of close to the center.
It was a circular one, wasn't it?
Yeah. People complained about the HUD being too sort of close to the middle, so they had to, like, patch
the
HUD for about size. Yeah, and the
inventory is like that circle, isn't it?
It was very simple. It wasn't as... Invisible War was not as bad as people made out it was at the time. The job was, it was very different to Deus Ex, original Deus Ex. Very different. It was a lot simpler to it. And I didn't like how it got simplified. However, the game itself wasn't that bad. It got a lot of bad rep and that tarnished its reputation a little bit. Thief, people were about Thief, but Thief, they stuck more to the original game. Now, the thing about Thief Deadly Shadows is it does not play well with modern systems.
I wouldn't imagine so. Not given that age.
No, it doesn't play well. It won't. You're lucky to get it. It will just about launch. But it can't handle, has no widescreen support properly set in. Sound works okay, but overall it doesn't work very well. Fortunately, there's a group of die-hard Thief people out there who, since the sort of mid to late 2000s, when basically operating software game released with Thief problems, they've been releasing fan patches. And there's one specific fan patch called the Sneaky Upgrade. It's like the patch you can get. And it's a little installer. You install it. It fixes the resolution, so you can play in ultra-wide. It fixes lots of little things. It does little tweaks as well. So you basically, by default, when you install it, you can the basic install, if you want, just basically makes it work and doesn't do anything else to it. But you can add other things onto it. So I put a few options in. So I don't want to like change too much around the mechanics. I want to sort of stick the mechanics, but I do want to sort of do a little bit of like tweaking. So
the stuff that was in there would be like what, like AI fixes?
Yeah, there was lots of fit. If you look at the option menu, there's a huge amount of things you can change. You can change the AI, you can do lots of stuff with it. It comes with a configuration tool to change all. But the one thing I did, a couple of things I did do was there's an option that because in one thing they did in Thief from Thief, like original Thief, the Dark Project, then you had Thief Gold, which was a Dark Project but like remastered with extra levels in it. Then you had Thief, the Metal Age, which was the second one. Your in those games, your health was on the right hand side and your infantry stuff was on the left hand side. Mm-hmm. Thief Deadly Shadows, they swapped it round. So basically what this game doesn't trip me out, but it's like, but why? This the mod switches it back for you. Make it
clear. Wow. One option.
It's an option. But there's two bits on it which weren't in the original Thief, which I did add in, and they are really good. First is in the previous first two Thief games, every mission started with an anime, not so much an anime cutscene. The anime cutscene was like a series of images that Garrett, the main character, talked over. That saw like, you know, they saw like these things, like they saw like move and like zoom in, but they're stationary. They're meant to look like sort of like almost painted, sort of stylized, and usually with some sound effects in the background. Deadly Shadows did have that. They just had Garrett reading basically a text. The text would come on the screen, and Garrett just read it out. Somebody has gone through all the main missions and made cutscenes that look very similar to the original style.
Wow, that's dedication.
They've added in music, they've added in sound effects, and it is seamless. It feels they are so well done. And literally, you can see all they've done is basically gone to parts of the level, took a screenshot, and put like through some filters on Photoshop to make it look like it's painted. But it's so well done. And it just, that was like that. I had the end to see what it was like, and it's like, oh, I'm sold, that's going to stay. That is so good. The other magical thing they've done is Deadly Shadows and Invisible War had the same issue was, and again, this is mainly because of consoles, was the levels couldn't be very big. Because overall,
Hardly any RAM on those consoles for a start.
Exactly. So the levels were really tiny. So a level would be split into like two sections normally. FIFA, I think all of their levels are split into two sections. Mm-hmm. And you basically had to, so you'd have to go through loading screen to go back and forth between the areas, which is sort of like breaks the flow up a bit. They have gone through and basically merged all the levels together. So you got they lose the loading, so there's no loading screen anymore. So literally, it's a bit weird because how Thief disguised it was, you basically would like, say in the first one there's a castle, you walk down a long corridor and then you would hit the loading screen and you then start the game. Basically, the corridor would be almost mirrored that you then walk down. So now you just have this really long corridor that they've literally stitched the two together.
Oh, sure.
Which I'm actually kind of glad you did that way rather than like try and sort of like... I like it when modders just like sort of like tweak a few bits without trying to like overwrite like the original creative vision. So by that I mean things like I'm not a fan of texture packs and stuff because like they're never quite as good as the people who the original artists had a vision and design and so forth, and they can get close to it. They're not always as good as they could be. But
sometimes
this one,
things just look really out of place.
Exactly. They've just linked the two levels together. So you just, it's just, again, it's just magical. You talk like, to the point where actually, I was trying to remember where the joins were. Some it's really obvious where the join is. You can tell straight away, oh yeah, this is where the loading screen is. Some are more egregious than others. For example, the famous level of Thief is the cradle. And in the cradle, you walk through the join, you walk down like a sort of corridor into like this exercise yard. The other side of the exercise yard would be the loading screen. But then, what they do in the other part is it'd almost be like the load screen got moved to the other side of the exercise yard. So like imagine if you're looking down top down, it'd be north and south. The load screen would be the north side. You'd walk through it, and when you get to the next level, they'd move to the south side. So you're like the same exercise yard, like it's just shifted across. What this means is in this version is you walk down, you go into an exercise yard, walk a bit longer, you get into another exercise yard, and then you get to the natural place. It's a bit weird. So that's an obvious join. But some of them, I was like, I don't remember where these two levels joined. I actually can't remember. So
that's
cool. Yeah, it is really cool. Really, it's really, and the thing is, this was updated this year. They're still updating it.
Just as a note, a little kind of random thing for people to try and figure out, because I can't remember for the life of me, but it's about how levels joined and how developers back in the day got around like having smaller maps and trying to join them together. Do you, because I don't remember which one this is, do you remember the game that to get around storage limits, RAM limits, loading limits. They had smaller levels. And to get around, to get from one map to the next, it would almost like kind of quick save, load in the new map. And then quick load, and or like, you get what I mean? Like it would quickly save, load in, and then boot you into the next one. But they it seemed almost seamless, but it's actually there's like a little hitch, and that hitch is actually
a
save state being made.
Is that what Oblivion did? Because you used to get caves and you'd have a little stutter while you jumped the loading screen to the next bit. Is that what Oblivion did?
It might have been Oblivion. I don't remember.
Yeah.
For some reason, I thought it might have been something like. Because I don't imagine that being a thing on Deus Ex. It might have been something.
Deus Ex Invisible War definitely had loading screen. This is why I saw that ruined it. Because there's a level in Deus Ex, you start on an island, basically. Liberty Island, you basically start on.
Outside
of Unatco. And that you can explore the whole island, it's huge. In Invisible War, the last level takes place on Liberty Island. Because of RAM issues, it's split into about four different sections, which breaks the flow up. Yeah, it breaks the whole flow up because they just couldn't do it. It breaks up the immersion. We have to keep going from loading screen to loading screen. But I think the one you're referring to is, I think Oblivion used to do that sort of like save, quick, load, trick to get you across different sections. I have a feeling, because that'd be a very Bethesda thing to do.
Or could it have been Morrowind?
It could well be Morrowind, actually. Yeah, it could have been. So,
we have to look into that at some point, that's going to do me nuts.
The thing is, the reason I sort of mentioned saving, actually, is one thing I forgot about Thief, is Thief was from a time of games where you had to remember to save.
Intimate relationship with F5.
Yeah, Thief has no autosave at all. So I was playing. I was like, I'm literally like sort of getting to the second level and thinking, yeah, this is good. And I just had a little battle and nearly got killed by a hammerhead. I was not a pagan. And I think to myself, oh, good, that was lucky. I might have had to reload the checkpoint. And I thought, hang on a second, this game doesn't have checkpoints. Quickly
surprise.
Load. Oh, no, my last save was literally the start of the game. Oops.
Good job, man.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I've had that.
There are sort of few issues. So, perhaps I better talk about the actual mechanics of the game. So, Thief Deadly Shadows, you play a thief called Garrett, and the Thief Deadly Shadows is the third game in the trilogy. And it's based around a place called The City. That's all it's called. It's not given any other name. Very little is known about it because actually, in most cases, very small scale, what you're dealing with. Because Garrett is a thief. Primarily, he's a thief. He got trained by an order called the Keepers, who basically tried to pickpocket one of their members, and he was like, it's very impressive you're able to see me. I don't want to be seen, because the Keepers can like hide in plain sight and stuff. They sort of these glyphs to be sort of magical. And so they brought Garrett on board, and he basically decides, actually, this isn't for me. I'm going to go freelance. And it's always wondered why he never got killed. You find out in Fito Shares that they were going to kill him, but it turns out there's a prophecy that they're reading and his name keeps appearing in it. So their person who's reading the prophecy basically says, don't kill him. He's going to be important later.
Kill him. They ain't going to make any more games if we kill him.
Yeah. So the first thief concerns the pagans. Pagans are like sort of the hippies with swords. They're all about nature because they're all about nature and stuff. And they have this god called the Trickster God, and Garrett is basically tricked by the Trickster God into stealing some artifacts for him. And Trickster God tries to like raise an army to take over the city, and Garrett defeats him. The second game, which is probably one I like the most out of the three, actually, is called the Metal Age. And it follows the Hammerites. The Hammerites are this sort of like, almost like Catholic faction, but they're based on the Builder God. I quite like the Hammerites, actually. I think I would probably be a Hammerite if I was a thief. It's all about building and engineering and structures. They're all about sort of, you know, making things, and the work is all about things. They're called Hammerites because their main weapon is a Warhammer, which they do swing at you very hard. And in the male age, it's like a subsect of them goes rogue and basically goes down the route of being like ultra. He basically wants to go like, anything green is bad, metal everywhere. We're going to wipe out all life, basically, apart from those pet things. And it gets quite creepy and stuff. He's got any basically robot. There's like robots that drop royal ground and will shoot cannibals at you. It's really good. And then there's and you basically defeat them. And then finally, you have the Keepers. And Deadly Shadows concerns itself with the Keepers. So each game basically takes on one of the factions. The Keepers are all about maintaining not so much status quo, but what they call balance. So you try and prevent one faction getting more or less powerful than the others. And they're like almost like a background referee into the city, that they use glyphs and stuff to control things, and they will try and sort of like hopefully prevent things getting out of control and so forth. And Gax spends a lot of time dealing with the Keepers. And this right. game is based all around the Keeper faction. One thing about the Thief tends to do is you don't get the full picture to quite late on what you're doing, and the sort of bits and pieces you're basically most of the game you're trying to find out about this prophecy about the Brethren and Betrayer. You don't know who it is, but you want to try and find out what it is and what they're doing. And the game is trying to find information about it, and then when you do find information about it, dealing with them and what they're actually going to do. I want some more twists about it.
Just as a note about Thief, because you sound like it takes a while for him to kind of get to the meat of it. This could be every Thief game, but like I swear there's like parts where, you know, your geezer's like, yeah, I need to go pay rent.
Yeah, that literally the very first mission, I think like the second or third mission of like Dead of Male Age is, I'm going to the docks tonight because landlord's coming tomorrow.
That's it, and you just need to get some coin to pay your rent.
Mm. But that docks, you see, that basically introduced that mission is actually very cleverly crafted, as it introduces here's interesting what they did with Thief Male Age 2P. So the Dark Project, they came up with a storyline and then made levels to match the storyline. Dark Project also was more action, it had a lot more action bits in it. There are like whole segments where you'd be having to fight like big monsters and creatures and stuff. And rather than this full stealth. So the second game, they basically did away with all that and focused just on the stealth aspect of it. Got people actually enjoyed. The second game, they made they basically designed and planned the levels first and then made the story to go around them, which is an interesting way to do it. But you get some really classic levels and stuff. So the dock level basically is your first introduction to the Karis's faction, the mechanist.
Those guys.
The Karis's faction, the mechanists. Mechanists. That's your basically first introduction, because you'll encounter some of their equipment and stuff in a warehouse on the docks, and that's your first sort of like teasing it. But then things also happening. Gats, they sort of like try and target Garrett and stuff. You don't know why, and eventually it leads back to them eventually. And Deadly Shadows, you spend a lot of game doing stuff, and you're not really sure why you're doing it. You do it because, like, first the Thief's Argent to steal some things, which you do, and then you'll go and you're like, oh, actually, I'm going to try and find, they need these other items of prophecy, I'm going to try and find those, which you do. It's only sort of quite late on that all of a sudden it comes clear what you do. It's like probably like the last third of the game, I would say, that actually you suddenly realise what the plan is afoot and what's going on. You need to deal with shit. It's So mechanics, gameplay wise, it's also you could be like, it's possible to clear body, but you're not in a shred fight, you're going to struggle. The game is set around being stealth, it's about sneaking past people. Now, if you get the drop on people by sneaking up to them, you can knock them out. Pretty much all enemies can be knocked out in one hit.
Well, yeah, sure, because it's from the kind of the golden age of gaming where you weren't playing as a giant superpowered space marine. You're just average bloke.
Thief does the best thing that a stealth game can do. And a stealth game, and I've said this before many times, stealth games should make you feel both simultaneously very powerful, but also very vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a blackjack that you can take out any enemy. If you get up behind them, you're going to take them out in one hit. But if they see you, you ain't going to last long unless you can run and hide quickly.
Sure.
You ain't going to last long at all. So there's every time you sort of approach enemy, there's this very much like sort of risk reward of are they going to turn around and see me and so forth. Now, at the lower difficulty levels, and one of those things with Thief as well is that every mission you can change difficulty level at the start. So every mission, it's not a game setting for doing it. It's every start you can just choose to go for like easy, medium, hard, or very hard, expert difficulty levels at the very start, which is quite neat. So if you find like one mission too easy, the next mission you might jump up a little bit, or if it's that's a bit of a struggle, you might drop it down a little bit. You can do. And the missions basically, the difficult levels basically will change number of guards. It will change how aware they are, so it'll change how alert they can pick up stuff. It will change your basic goal of every mission. The goal of every one, well, apart from your special goals, your basic goal is collect a certain percentage of loot. So if you like, say if you take normal for example, it's 40% of the loot, which is very easy to do. I think expert's 90%, which actually is actually not that bad. That's actually quite doable.
It's not that bad, but I need to be able to carry them extra knives and forks.
Yeah. Well, luckily, there's no weight in Thief. You just pick them up and you see your backpack and boom, you got it.
He's got the old broken sword, George Stobard pocket, just in it goes. Yeah.
And there's also like special loot as well. So there'll be like a Pacific painting or like a golden crown, special loot that you can pick up. And high levels require you to get a certain amount of it. So, like normal, you need to get 1 out of 3. Hard is 2 out of 3. And expert's all of them. So you have to sort and yeah. So it's definitely basically doesn't the actual like sort of like main missions though don't change that much. It's more like sort of the guards and what you've got to do. And so you sneak around. You can defeat the guards. You can use either your blackjack to knock them out non-lethally. You've got a dagger which you can kill people with. Now the game makes one other thing. So it comes with an age of gaming where the game itself makes no moral judgments on you. You want to kill people, fine. It's absolutely fine. If you kill people, they do make noise, and they die, and leave blood behind. But, you know, you can just, if you want, you can just kill people, and it doesn't say, hey, that's bad, you shouldn't be doing that. I tend to knock people out. So you choosing just to knock people out is your own personal moral judgment.
Yeah, sure. I preferred stuff like that, though.
Yeah.
Because it was, you know, the game didn't try to force you down a particular... That's why I've always said, like, you know, you're playing an RPG, you're trying to play a chaotic evil character, and you've seen the meme, and you're like, hello, FBI agent Hitler, because the game forces you to, like, go down a goody two-shoes path at some point or other, There's some mechanic that will require you to be a certain level with a certain faction to do a certain thing. And you're like, just let me play the game.
Yeah. I think the biggest actually crit for one game that does this in a bad way, but it was trying to do something, but I disliked it immensely, was Dishonored. I like Dishonored's game series. I really enjoy Dishonored because Dishonored, a lot of the ex-Thief deads went to go and make Dishonored.
Yeah.
And even Dishonored 2, Corvo is voiced by Stephen Russell, a.k.a. Garrett. So playing Dishonored 2 is like playing a newer version of Thief. However, they introduced this chaos mechanic where if you kill a lot of people and so forth, you end up with the mission of either high or low chaos. If you kill more people, you end up with high chaos. And that will then it'll basically change the ending of the game, give you a bad ending. It even changes the weather in later parts of the game. It'll make certain things happen later levels, like you will counter like more zombies and stuff. And I really dislike that mechanic because basically it's like, well, if I don't want to literally make the ending hard, I have to play non-lethally.
Mm-hmm.
And there aren't that many non-lethal options. It's the amount of ways you can kill people in that game, really gruesomely, is loads. But non-lethal options, you basically ain't got much at all. You basically not. I think you choke people out in that game. You ain't really got many options. So it sort of like missed the points. Like, frankly, I think the chaos mechanic should have been stripped out of the game completely. Forget about it. Don't have it at all. Let people make their own moral judgments. And some of its moral quandaries as well were quite weird. There was like one where, if I remember correctly, it's been a while since I played it, but I remember at the time thinking that's a bit odd. You come across like a guy who's basically being forced to be kept alive by his business partner because he needs him. and he's like suffering and in pain and stuff. And you'd think that relieving him of his pain, that he wants to die. He tells you he wants to die. You'd think that'd be a good thing, but it's not. The game treats this as a bad thing. Punish you for it. It's like, all right, so the good thing to do is to let this guy live. All righty ho then. And I might
and
be
misremembering. He's there and he's suffering. And
yeah. I might be misremembering that somehow slightly, but I remember at the time it left a bad taste in the mouth.
I've played many a game that's like that. And you're like, surely that shouldn't be right.
Yeah.
You're being a dick to me because I'm doing the right thing or what I perceive to be the right thing.
Yeah, I don't mind making characters comment on you or do stuff. I don't mind that sort of thing so much.
I will say I wasn't a fan of that in Human Revolution.
Yeah, Deus Ex Human Revolution.
Yeah, some of the snarky comments that are made towards like, you have no idea, mate.
Yeah.
Like you've got two options. You've got two options. I'm either a serial killer or, I don't know.
I mean, Human Revolution wasn't as bad as it's not as bad as Dishonored. Dishonored, that is its big failing. I love Dishonored as a game because it does play very much like Thief, but that's its big failing as the Chaos System. Does Human Revolution anywhere near as bad as that?
I think it might just be because I don't like the tech guy in Human Revolution.
He's
a twat.
Yeah, he is a dick to you. He's an absolute dick to you. He doesn't like you from the start. Towards later on in the game, you and him do start to see eye to eye and start to become sort of like friendly. But at the start, he is an absolute dick to you. He's meant to wind you up and annoy you. Back to Thief though. So options you've got available for dealing with people, you can either knock them out or kill them. Doesn't matter which way you do it, you won't really get any comments on it. You have weapons to help you, other weapons you have to help, or more tools really. You have broadhead arrows, which you can shoot somebody at range. Because right early on, until quite late in the game, you have no option of dealing with people stealthily at range. The only way to knock them out is to get up close to them. Later on, you do unlock gas arrows, which you can knock people out with at range. You have fire arrows, which, again, kill people. They're mainly useful for like killing undead. Because undead creatures won't die easily. You basically, they're very hard to kill normies, but fire arrows will kill them very easily. So that's, you tend to use them for them. Also on the top of monsters. You've also got water arrows, as you mentioned earlier, which you use to put out flames. So they're mainly used for knocking out flames and water and stuff. Moss arrows will, if fired on the ground, create a place of soft ground you can walk over. What moss arrows also do, which is quite fun, if you shoot at an enemy, you basically temporarily disable them because they'll start coughing and choking on the moss. And once they're coughing and choking, you get past them. They'll be alerted afterwards, but you can get past them.
I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, the game's got lots of little emergent gameplay features. You can sort of like sneak in there as you do stuff. Like there are guards with torches as well, so you can shoot water out and put the torch out, which like, really annoys them. you also get like mines, there's gas mines, or there's noisemaker arrows, which basically make like a far-right noise wherever they hit, so that distracts people away. So you have got some options to do. So you've got quite a few options of stuff to do to deal with people and so forth. You've got like flash bombs that basically is like a little flashbang grenade. That's like your get out of jail free card because that will basically blind everything. Most monsters will be blinded by that. And you can just get away because they'll be blind. They can't see you and pursue you. It's just knowing that if guards know you're there, they like get tougher. So if like a blackjack will knock somebody out from behind, they don't know you. If they know you're there, it's going to take like half a dozen hits to get close to knocking them out. So it game has a nice balance of warning stuff and so and do. Oh, and some of the like emergent gameplay features, things like fire arrows. If you farm near a torch, you've put out, you'll set the torch back on light. Little things like that they thought about and did. It's really quite neat. And even this playthrough, there's so many hidden things in it. I found areas I've never found before. And I've played through this game probably about 6 or 7 times. It's probably my most replayed game. I used to play it every year for Christmas.
Not additionals because of the mod or just...
Nope. Or they were there all the time. I just missed them every single time. Wow. I found a hidden area in the cradle. I found a hidden area I didn't know was there.
So are you? Are you? Do you, when you play? This is going to sound really, really dumb, but like when? So every you play it every, you know, every Christmas or so.
Not for
long. Have
you just
been playing it? Gone through the same routes? Like, have you just found a route and you've gone, this
virtually,
is the optimal route?
Yeah, pretty, wow. pretty much. I just enjoy the experience so much.
Sure.
I haven't played it for a lot of years, but when it first came out, I played it. I did when it first came, because it came out in May, which is the worst time of year to release a FIFA game because it's bright lighted ever all day long. And you need to play this game in the dark. Oh, FIFA also is the only game. It's the only game that's made me scream out loud twice. The first time I was playing it one evening, day into the evening, I was in the Hammerwhite Cathedral, and I opened up a cell in like one of their factories, and I saw a dead body in the ground. I think, oh, dead body. Okay, I'll go and investigate that. But I'm not so sure. I'll just walk forward. Turns out it's not a dead body, it's a zombie. It just jumps up at me and goes, and I scream.
At least it weren't a spider, huh?
No. Mother comes running through the door and says, you're right, you're right. I said, yeah, a zombie nearly got me. And then the shell brick cradle, which for a long time was considered one of the most scariest levels ever made. It had a massive reputation at the time, being because right towards the end part of the game. It's literally like the sort of penultimate proper level of the game. There are some like sort of mini levels in between, but it's sort of right at the end. And it is so well designed. It is first time playing through it. I literally couldn't play it for more than like half hour, 40 minutes at a time. I had to stop because it creeped me out so much. Because the monster design, it is so well done. They are, I mean, now lots of games have done similar things now. So it's a bit like going back and watching an old film. And you see all the like tropes a bit. They did a lot. They spent a lot of time researching what was scary. They took inspiration of like saw like previous horror games like Silent Hill and stuff, like sort of psychological horror. Like the enemy types in it are undead, but they are like ultra. Whereas normal undead will chase you, these guys are really fast. They're really tough. And they did little things like as they wander around, you can tell where they are because they cause the lights nearby to flicker. So you'll just walk down a corner, you'll see some lights flickering, and you go, I know there's something down there waiting for me. Little things like that. And yeah, this game, I basically, same thing happened to me. I just sort of ran one corner to another dead and screamed. And,
oh, mate.
Yeah, I literally loaded this level up, and because I loaded this level up, I think I come home from we've been out, and I come back, load level up, and I think I played it, I was here for 10 minutes. Encounter the zombie. I was so scared I had to save and quit there and then. So I played for 10 minutes.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It's even now, it's still. Obviously, once you've played it a few times, you know what everything is. You don't. It's surprising. But even now, playing through it, the sound design makes it feel really oppressive. It does still creep you out a little bit.
Do you play headphones or through speakers?
Speakers, 5.1 surround sound.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. That's creepiest. That is still a very creepy level. Not as creepy as the first time I played it, obviously, because I know what's where, what's going to happen and stuff. It doesn't even make use of jump scares, which is interesting. It makes no, there's no jump, apart from like, and the thing about the zombies jumping up at you is if you see they're there, you can deal with them.
Yeah, sure.
So it's not like it's a jump scare that is, you're forced on you. You can avoid it if you're paying attention. Yeah. It doesn't, but other than that, it makes no use of any jump scares whatsoever, which is an interesting thing.
I hate jump scares. They're so cheap.
They are cheap, yeah. They are cheap, because yes, you jump and stuff, but you don't feel like you've been scared. You feel like
it's a reaction. Anyone.
Yeah, it's a reaction rather than a scare.
Yeah.
And afterwards you go, fuck's sake.
I blame YouTube for that stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Early YouTube Let's Players overacting a proper hammering it up. It's like, guys, come on. It's about as scary as a Saturday night curry.
Yes. It's got the level design, all levels on it I feel are really good. They're all well designed. And they've all got lots of little hidden things to find. Play it again, and so I've obviously been a few years, I play back to you, and where it does fall down a little bit
Don't lie.
There is one bit that does fall down a little bit on. And this is fairly minor in the grand scheme.
Leave him alone. he's just playing. You're safe, mate. It's fine. You'll be all right.
So, interlocking the first time to link all the levels together, you have what they call the city. You can explore the city. So there's like 5 or 6 like sections of it that you basically can go around, and there's like some houses to rob, and you'll come across, there'll be just all like NPCs walking about, and if you see one with like sort of like you'll see them walking past, and you'll see like they're wearing like fancy gear and like the like necklaces or bracelets or tiaras, and you can like mug them and steal their gear. And
Witness State Simulator.
It is, yeah. Your fences are in the city, so you have like different. There's like 5 different fences, or technically 4, because one something happens to one of them, and they will basically take your loot is divided into like 3 types. You've got like gold, gems, and artwork, and most of them only take 2 types. They all only take 2 types a pair, so you have to go to each fence and sell and so forth. There's also shops as well where you buy your gear. And this is where it gets a little bit annoying. Each shop only sells 1 type of elemental arrow. So, you know, water, moss, which is apparently
water from geezer over there, moss from over there, fire from the bloke down the back.
That, when you want to just restock and send arrows, you know, because that the city hasn't been stitched together. Like the rest of it, it's still got loading screens in between each section. It's like, I have to buy some fire arrows. I've got to go through 3 loading screens to get to the bit of the fire arrows.
Is there not a part in the patch?
There might well be a patch update that means all the shop, all those places sell all the stuff. There might well be an option in there to do that. And that that would be a welcome theme. Like I say, I try to not change the core experience too much.
Yeah, sure.
But in other words, I was like, actually, that's kind of frustrating having to go to 3 different shops to buy each element has to restock. That's kind of frustrating. I don't miss it. But the city's probably the sort of weak. I know something about the city is you go and you rob the places. You just want, and the loot respawns every sort of day. It's the same place. You're in the same place. And the first time you go through an area, there'll be like little stories. So there's like a guy who's hiring a thief, who's claimed to be you. He's claimed to be Garrett. And you overhear them having this conversation, and that you'll see the job he's going to do. And if you do the job for him, he'll pay you instead. Because he's like got like sets of like a dead drop that he's going to pay you with. There's another one a guy who gets caught cutting gems, and you'll encounter him, and you can basically like defend him and so forth. But whatever you do, they sort of disappear. That's it. That only happens on the first day, and then they don't appear again. So the second day, it feels empty.
Sure.
The only sort of thing that sort of is like goes on sort of day after day is there's 2 guards, and they have a chat every day about one of the guards has got an injury onto his hand. There you go. Basically, it's you. And he every day talk about him going to the doctor in various treatments and stuff. And he's like bathing in ox blood and all this. It builds a little story over the course of several days. You get a little storyline going on between the two.
Sure.
That's sort of like. I would like to, more of that would have been nice. Also, actually, one thing I'd say about Thief as well is one thing that other games have, say, stealth games have done, which makes them, in my opinion, feel a bit weak and a bit cheaper now, is the guards in Thief were just dudes doing a job. When they're talking to each other, they're like, oh, I'm just going to go into the shop later. They're not like, in most modern stealth games, they specifically make the guards dickheads.
Yeah,
they're just dickheads to be dead. The reason is, so you don't feel bad when you kill one of them, because they say this will make these guards all assholes. But actually, the guards in Thief are designed to be sympathetic, and they're not so much sympathetic. They're just meant to be like normal people. They're just people hired to be a guard.
Yeah, they're just geezers doing their job so they can put food on the table and.
Yeah, and it's like that's just, why do all guards have to be assholes in modern games just to make you feel
everything
guilty?
Everything has to be political, and you have to be justified to do really shitty stuff to people.
Yeah,
that's all.
Yeah, if you kill a guard who's like talking about like going to get like who's moaning about his boots, and you kill him, that feels you feel like bad about it, and you should feel bad about it because you have just killed somebody who's just doing their day to day job. So I do like about. I could, as you say, I'd go for a long time about 50 Shadows. It is such a great game. I've enjoyed it immensely. Every tour day, I've got a blast. I can't wait to play a bit more Thief tonight.
Are you going to do a playthrough, or is that beyond the scope of...
I could do a playthrough. I've completely finished it now. I've played through the whole game now. I finished it last Saturday. But it took about 2 weeks to go through the whole game.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I've played sort of like off and on here and there. I think, well, I'll tell you, I'll look on the Steam, I'll tell you what my play time was for Thief. Bear in mind, I know where most things are now, so I know where like most of the loot stuff, so I can go through quite quickly. That took me 15 hours to replay through Thief from start to finish, yeah. And that's, if you went into not knowing what everything is and how to do it, because obviously I know how to do all the like special work, all the puzzles and stuff. If you didn't know how to do that, that'd probably take me like 20, I reckon. It's such a great game.
Yeah, I could probably see that.
Yeah. So honestly, I used to play for a long time. I used to play every Christmas, about 4 or 5 years, and then obviously you stop. But I felt like for some reason I just had a feeling this year, I fancy playing FIFA again. So I'm so glad I did. I may go back and play the first two again as well.
Avoiding the other one that isn't really Thief.
Oh, I'll play through Dishonored again. I like Dishonored.
I do like how we're avoiding. Wasn't there a Thief 4? Or did they actually cancel that like smart devs?
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about.
It's like that, huh? Okay.
Yeah. There was this game that came out was called Thief about 2014, but no, we know nothing about that.
That was the emo phase, weren't it, for everyone? Because I think they did something similar with Devil May Cry. They decided to reboot absolutely everything.
Yeah, Thief. That was they've basically broke all stuff that made Thief good. Dickhead guards. Garrett is this twat because they thought every protagonist had to be edgy,
and yeah, by they had being attitude. Edgy,
they had to have attitude and be rude to people for the sake of it. Gary in Thief is a bit, he's a bit snarky. He doesn't like authority. So
what
when
comes
he's
to the territory, he's a fucking thief.
So when he deals with the keepers, he'll be rather snarky to a lot of them. But only like the sort of ones higher up. The ones sort of lower down, he's quite happy to have a chat with and so forth. And he's the sort of person you'd happily have a pint with. This is my judgment of characters in games is, would I have a pint with them? And I'd have a pint with Garrett. The new Thief Garrett, I couldn't stand him. Modern Garrett Thief. And I said modern Garrett Thief because, again, Thief and Garrett, he lives in a shitty little apartment, the original Thief. Modern Thief, he lives in a clock tower. Because, he has to have a cool base. Yeah. It's like, oh, for fuck's sake, you've missed a point. You've missed a point of what made Thief relatable in a weird way. You've kind of missed a point. And I did play for the whole game, but I literally can't remember most of it, if truth be told. I couldn't even tell you what the storyline was. I've literally, it's just all like been erased in memory.
To be honest with you, Ram, that sounds right for a modern game.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, I won't talk about the Thief game. But yeah, Thief, good game. Really glad. And if you've not played it, I really recommend you. But you will need the sneaky update. You can't. It's basically very hard to play without the sneaky update because it does fix so many things.
I wonder how it'll work on the Steam Deck. Like, if it'll just...
I think it's got to be... Oh, one thing there is one problem with Thief, Deadly Shadows. And there is a bug in the city area. I don't know if it's I vaguely remember this being a bug the first time round. The city area crashes roughly every 20 minutes if you're in the city areas, so save often. The main levels are fine, the actual missions are fine, it's fine, it doesn't crash, but in the city areas roughly every 20 minutes the game crashes. Must be a memory leak somewhere, but I don't know what's causing it. But it doesn't matter what city area you're in. So when I'm in the city areas, I try and just get through as quick as I can.
F5, 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 F5.
Yeah.
basically. Upward crash, doesn't matter, F5.
But yeah, so I said I gushed on for FIFA for a long time, and I probably have gushed on for FIFA for quite a long time. So I will stop myself there.
Mate, it's fine. You balanced my pointless FPGA ramble because I didn't go anywhere with that. It was great.
Oh, bloody hell. I've been gushing about FIFA best part of an hour. So
it's all good. Well, nothing wrong with that.
Oh,
good game.
Well, it is a good game. Well, on that note, I'll just say thanks. So I'm going to end it here. Unless there's anything else you want to add before we carry on, before we end today, Skaz?
No, that's good. Thanks for inviting me back for this one, man.
Yeah, thank you. We sneak onto our Christmas one, maybe?
I'll think about it.
So, thank you, buddy, for watching this episode. I hope you've enjoyed it. You can check out our website at randos.co.uk. Our next broadcast, our next episode will be coming out on the YouTubes on the, he says, looking up the date, on the 21st of December. There'll be a video out for that. So come check that one out. You can also check out our games night. Now, we were meant to be doing games night tomorrow. That I don't know if that will be happy or not. It might just be me streaming something. But there'll be something going on.
Ram's been streaming.
A little bit.
He's been streaming. I was like, Ram's gone live? Is it podcast night? No, he's playing a game. Twitch.tv/TheSuffolkRam. Go there.
So I might, if Sam's not around, I might just stream something myself tomorrow night. So you can check that out. Yeah, and are you still streaming at the moment, Skaz? Are you off streaming at the moment?
I'm on and off. I'm on and off.
Well, keep it on Twitch.tv Skaz. It's SK4ZZIZOUS.
Legend.
And keep an eye on that and see what he streams. Yeah, so if not, and also over Christmas, you'll see our Christmas episodes coming out. We are playing a Escape First Class The Train of Thought. Means they are playing. It's a mouthful of a title. It's a puzzle game.
Oh, right.
And, it's set on a train, and you have to wait from one carriage to another. And I think you need a PhD to complete this game, because there are, like, three puzzles which we solve. We're not quite sure how.
All right. Like,
I don't know why that worked, but it just did.
I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, so that'll be coming out. I've got literally one episode left to edit. I'm really pleased.
It's not related to Alchemist, is it?
No, very similar name though. Strange enough, we found it when we looked at first Escape Alchemist. I mean, this game came up. I said, what do you think about this? Because it was only like £3. I said, what do you think to this game for Games Night? He's like, oh, that looks all right for Christmas. He said, yeah. So I said, it's only like 3.5 hours long. So yes, we met up once. We met up on a Sunday a couple of weeks ago and played through it. It took us about 5 hours. There was one mission where there's one chapter of an hour and a half. I have edited a lot of that out.
You were looking at it going, what have we got to do? Where have we got to go? And it turns out there's this one corridor, this one turning that just looks too dark for it to actually be anything.
Trouble is, about getting too big discussion of it, the biggest issue with it as a puzzle game, it does one thing I hate in puzzle games, and that is pixel hunting. You are looking for shit. Don't. And if you can't find that one thing you need, you can't get past the puzzle. You know, if you're going to lock stuff away behind other puzzles, don't just hide it. You have to find a load of books in a library.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I was going to say, the Alchemist game we played on the 24 hours was, it had something similar where either Zebra or I knocked over a vase and there was a key in it. And we needed that key. But we wouldn't have known had we not have just been prattling about because we got stuck.
I don't like that sort of stuff in puzzle games. Just lock it behind, make stuff behind puzzles. Don't lock things away by having to find stuff. But anyway, look out for that. That'll be coming out over the Christmas period. So for me, the Suffolkram.
Skazius.
Thank you very much for joining us this evening, and look forward to seeing you on the next one. Have a good evening, guys.
Take it easy, guys.